Hey y'all, it's Dave from Dadville. Hopefully by now you know that Dadville is a wonderful, fun side gig for John and I, as we're both actually singer-songwriters in our real life here in Nashville. And speaking of singer-songwriter, I wanted to tell y'all about my latest release, Remembering Greatest Hits Acoustic. Over the last few months, I've been releasing some of my favorite songs I've ever recorded, and you can hear them all right now. That's literally right now. It has been so fun hearing these stripped down acoustic versions of songs that people know and love. These are the songs that helped me build my career, and I'm so excited to share them with y'all in a new way. So if you can, and you will, and you want to, go check out Remembering Greatest Hits Acoustic, available now. Hi, I'm Dave Barnes.
And I'm John McLaughlin.
And welcome to Dadville.
Dadville is a podcast where we talk about life, love, and the pursuit of awesome dadding.
It's funny thoughts and deep talks.
So please, enjoy your time here in Dadville and enjoy this episode with...
Chip Dodd.
Johnny?
Hey, Dave.
Hey, okay.
Hey, hey, you want to go for a run later? Maybe like a just a quick like 5K?
Oh, my God.
Which is the only 5K I do.
Yes, absolutely. When you say a run, I always assume not just a 5K, but what
a
I call
quick
it, 5K. Speedy 5K. Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we do that, I will need to break out the Manscaped Performance Package.
Of course. Yeah, yeah, we need every advantage we can get.
Okay. And just so you know, the Manscaped Performance Package includes, listen, okay, buckle up.
Okay.
The Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer.
Yep.
Weed whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, because that's when I'm running. I don't want to think about that. John.
No. Aerodynamics.
Crop preserver deodorant, crop reviver toner, performance boxer briefs, and a travel bag to hold your goodies, Johnny.
Man.
Yep.
Just hearing that, I'm already envisioning. I can feel how aerodynamic we're both going to be.
Repeat this with me.
Okay.
Speed.
Speed.
I am speed.
Speed. I am speed.
That's good. Lower than mine. The Lawnmower 4.0 has a 7,000 RPM.
No.
Motor. Yes.
7,000?
Yeah, that's what I said. I'm not going to take it back. A new multifunction on-off switch that can engage a travel lock and gives you the ability to turn the 4,000K LED spotlight on and off when needed, just for a really precise shave, John.
So precise.
Yeah. Oh, did I mention the trimmer is waterproof?
No way.
Yes.
Listen, Dave,
yeah.
Precision is essential for elite athletes like you
That's
and me,
exactly
right?
Yes.
The Weed Whacker is also waterproof and uses a 9,000 RPM motor-powered 360-degree rotary dual-blade system. I could say that again, but I'm not going to.
No.
I'm just going to keep going.
Go.
This nose and ear hair trimmer provides proprietary skin-safe technology, which helps prevent nicks, snags, tugs, and all those delicate holes.
Oh, man. Weird. Okay. Delicate Holes is the name of my psych rock group in college. We had a huge following amongst
you
our parents.
You guys were amazing.
But, yeah, thanks. Manscaped even threw in two free bags of their Performance Package 4.0, the Manscaped Boxers and the Shed Travel Bag. Bring your comfort and boxers to another level.
You too can run like elite athletes, Dave Barnes and John McLaughlin. And you can get 20% off plus free shipping with the code DADVILLE at manscaped.com.
Oh, it just feels good to hear, John. Mm. That's all that I'm saying. I feel seen. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code DADVILLE at manscaped.com. Your boys have been through enough this past year, okay? Treat them with the best tools for the job for Manscaped. We have
We're
today.
We're off to a great start.
This is professional, by the
there
way.
There we go.
Everything.
You're wrapped up in the court. Turn around.
I do this professionally, too. So today we have Chip Dodd, folks, at Dadville. I'm going to tell you, Chip, this has been a long time coming.
Yeah, I got to say, I have heard of Chip Dodd literally for years now.
Yeah. One of my hopes with the podcast when we were starting was to have... your wisdom and your handsome
Well, every
energy.
Day I would come over here and I'd be like, I'd open and he'd say,
not today.
It's not ready.
Not happening.
They're not ready
it's
yet.
Not cooked.
Yeah, we need a couple more years. So, first of all, it's really good to see you.
Hey, good to see you
it's
today.
Always good
it's
to
been,
you.
It's been a while.
It has been a while.
Yeah. Met you on stage.
Yep.
Oh, gosh, 1,000 years ago.
Yeah. You look great.
I started doing this when I met you. I didn't know why. I didn't know Dave Barnes, quote.
Yeah.
You know, I thought you're just a cool dude.
Yeah.
So I'm curious.
I started laughing like
you guys
crazy.
Were on stage together.
We did some kind of
Chip
like
was
a
doing
panel?
Music early on.
Yeah, I wasn't doing music by any means. Not
was
even
djembe involved.
Yeah.
a lot of hand percussion.
Yeah, we were doing Voice of the Heart thing, and just like kind of like, yeah, a public.
Yep.
Nashville's first failed TEDx.
No, it was, I thought it was great.
It just didn't continue.
We'll find the footage. Yeah. We'll let the people decide.
Yeah. But yeah, I met you there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And since if I was actually a guest, we're going to get to this on the pod, which, yeah, I felt like was one of the biggest honors in my life, is that you and Steven would actually. I just thought, is this for, I mean, I told you on the podcast, remember when you have it, I was like, is this kind of like, this is what not to do? Or is this, am I the before for the
you're
guy?
You're the reference.
I'm the before. They're, yeah, like, this is what life is like without Chip Dodd's counsel.
No,
we're
going to
have
even.
A young, we're going to have a gentleman
even,
on.
Don't even go there. Don't be that hump. No, no way. You're the star.
Don't be that
You guys
humble.
Are stars.
Okay, so Chip, what we do, speaking of stars, right, as we start all of our Dadvilles, is we start with what we call the brag sheet, and it's just the who you are. So I'm about to read this thing. Buckle up. Okay.
All right.
Got an MA in English from University of Mississippi.
Yeah.
Which I got to say, go Dogs. I'm sorry.
That would be the, yeah, of course you do. Yeah.
Yeah. My wife
I'm
is
SEC,
a,
so you're good. No
okay.
Matter
okay.
What,
okay.
No matter what.
My wife is a Ole Miss grad, so you got that going for you.
Really?
Received a PhD in counseling from the University of North Texas. While in Texas, co-founded the Bent Tree Counseling Center.
Mm-hmm.
In 91, Chip developed a way of seeing, you must have been three or four then, you look so young. developed a way of seeing and expressing one's internal experience called the Spiritual Root System,
yes,
which I don't want to talk about. He founded the Center for Professional Excellence and was the executive director for 23 years. In 2003, founded Sage Hill, which has blessed my wife and I greatly, counseling practice here, a social impact organization. Written 8 books, which is always how many more than we've written, John?
I mean,
give or take.
That'd be 8.
It'd be 8.
Eight more
okay,
than
good.
Yeah, yeah.
Including the latest entitled How Are You Feeling Today?, which is a book designed to help kids understand and communicate their feelings. Hosted the How to Live podcast in 2019, transitioned into consulting, mentoring, and counseling full-time. And
yep.
Here you are.
Well, thank
here
you.
You are.
Thank you. That's a good list.
It is, right?
Yeah.
You got to be pretty proud of that. How do you feel hearing that?
You know, I fluctuate between shame, like, and
let's start there,
and the joy of getting to do it. Mm. It's both.
So, what's the shame piece?
Well, you know, it's just that the idea of being celebrated or laying claim to what I've done, and I have done it. You know, praise be to God, and that's true too. But just to say, yes, I've got it. Yes, I'm doing it.
What is that?
And that's toxic shame.
Like, where does that
just,
come from?
Well,
in all
here,
of us?
Here's the thing. You know, it's upbringing. It's always upbringing. Mm. You know, in terms of, I did a thing in Mississippi years ago, and we were about 50 physicians and a treatment thing. So all these 50 to 60 recovering physicians from, you know, these are just highly experienced guys, professionals. Some are just fresh out of treatment. Some have been in recovery for 20 years, and they're affecting the society. And at the end of it, we did a great job. I did a wonderful job. We just had a great community building for 2 days. And then at the end of it, I said, hey, all you guys stand up. I want you to give yourself an absolute standing ovation, round of applause. And they're laughing and clapping for each other and patting each other on the backs. And then I said, my assistant here, who's been so great all weekend, absolutely give him a round of applause. And I said, now me, give me an incredible round of applause, because I brought it. I brought it, gave it. I've loved doing it. I've loved being with y'all. So I told that story to a small group I did, a marriage conference thing I did with a small select group. And I told that same story. Afterwards, the guy told another guy, said, what an arrogant SOB.
Oh my gosh.
Can you believe that he actually, we paid him to come here and do this with us, and then he ended up bragging upon himself? So there's the story.
Mm.
The idea that people approval versus celebrating who God has made.
Mm.
If you're after the people approval, that means you got to stay in line. That they own you.
Wow.
You do what they say. You cooperate with their rules, their roles, their scripts, and then you'll belong and matter. But if you step out of line, now we know who to throw the rocks at. Now we know who to spotlight. Mm. Now we know who to scapegoat. Because many people are afraid of their own internal adventure.
Wow.
Their own internal anger. Their own internal wishing. And most people know the lives they don't have better than they know the lives they're living.
Wow.
And I
Jeez.
Think that's huge.
Gosh.
I think that's like,
Chippy
you know
D.
what I'm saying? They spend their time in fantasy and not living in the lives they have. And I want to live in the life I've got.
So, geez.
Which will get you in trouble.
No, this is what I want. This is why we have CD on. Okay?
If this is where our apologize starts, say, man,
no,
I'm sorry. Was that too much?
No. So, can you speak to what you just said? Because I think this is a, golly, my brain is hurting. Can you speak to that? So when we think about, I mean, you know, the podcast is called Dadville. When you reference that starts at childhood, like this weird conundrum of like celebrating what we work so hard to do.
Yep.
So how do you do that as a parent with your kids? Like what's the healthy version of that?
Well, one is every parent needs their own recovery, their recovery of their own identities, recovery of their own hearts, recovery of their own story. Because most children end up with the experience of getting in line. Mm. And if there's stuff that the parents don't want to deal with, don't want to face, don't want to have to contend with, where they came from, alcoholism, drug addiction, depression, divorce, and all these, this list of stories, solo parenting on. If that's not addressed and has some healing in it, then those children are going to carry the wounds of the parents. Mm-hmm. And so really getting your own recovery as a parent's one essential. And then that's going to prevent you, the parent, from doing a whole lot of things that you don't want your children to have to go through. Mm. But even then, there's going to be a story of regret. Like in my, if I could do it again, see, I'm an old man. I'm the old man now. If I could do it again, and I've been willing to face, I didn't get enough recovery. I didn't get enough perfection. There's a problem right there. Mm. I didn't do all that I wished I could have. Mm. So I end up with regret. Mm. And my biggest regret as a parent is that I didn't do enough removal of toxic shame, enough recovery of heart to be able to bless as much as I wished I could have.
Wow.
But that is not the end of the story. Mm. Because if the story continues, if we're willing to have regret, and regret gives us a thing called remorse. Remorse is a real pain about wishing things were different. So regret, my regret as a parent is this. I concentrated on trying to make sure that my sons would not have to experience certain things. So therefore, I concentrated on coaching, tutoring, training, teaching, you know, the prayer groups, make sure you're in this and that and all this, you know, bless your sons and all this stuff. Mm. That was a set of new rules, new roles, and new scripts. And then all of a sudden, it hit me later on. They're grown. They're in their 20s. They're gone. Like, I would wake up in the morning going like, you know, I think I missed a big chunk of the most important role there was. And it was dad. Mm-hmm. I put coach, teacher, trainer, tutor in place of the only person they couldn't find anywhere else.
Jeez Louise.
And sometimes I wasn't the place to come to where they could talk about the coaches, teachers, trainers, tutors who were full of crap or right who were shamers, should listers. And then so, you know, I was trying to protect my sons from those people because that's where so much of my own internalization of toxic shame, I'm not enough, I need to work harder, I should be more, I should be this, I should be smarter, tougher, you know, longer, whatever, nicer, better, gooder, well, all that stuff. And so to protect my sons from their pain, I ended up giving them the rules of how to deflect or ignore or endure what was going to be happening. And I taught them how to stay in line. Mm-hmm. So the very thing I didn't want off, in some ways I reinforced.
Have you talked with them about their experience?
Oh yeah.
Is it in line with how you kind of remember?
Yep, it sure is, and yet they're very gracious.
Yeah,
extremely gracious.
Yeah,
because see, a child is in very rare cases, and I've been in the depths of working in the world of addiction and upbringing and family of origin. I mean, just the whole dynamic, psychodynamic development of a human being, and very, very, very rare. I mean, like 0.01% of sons and daughters are even. That children are incapable of not loving their parents. Mm. They it's genetic. It's wiring. The adopted children still want to know, wished, even if they were raised in perfect, beautiful little families, they still wonder, what did I do to make you give me up? Mm. So every son, every daughter, I mean, I've got stories about sons waiting at their father's deathbed at mm-hmm. when they're 50, in their 50s, waiting to hear those magic words from the father. Mm-hmm. You know, I love you, or I wish I'd done differently, or whatever it is. And they don't hear it. Mm-hmm. And it leaves a hole in the bucket. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, so what's amazing is if the parent, the dad, the mom can come around to, I wish, then there's an automatic bridge being built that can be addressed. I've seen, even in the whole therapy world, I've seen 40 years disappear in 45 minutes.
Isn't that is crazy.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. Yeah, through truth telling. Mm-hmm. 'Cause the heart is awaiting connection. I mean, that's how we're made. And we're a society that concentrates on the brain, transaction, functioning, figuring, instead of dealing with feelings. Mm. I mean, that's our cult that moves us away from cultivating how we're actually made by God. Mm. So we have a cult that avoids the cultivation of transparency, vulnerability, authenticity, all the words mm-hmm. that we use now, to keep us away from regret, to keep us away from remorse, to keep us away from seeking forgiveness, to keep us away from humility, loneliness, sadness, hurt, fear, all the enemies that actually make us whole. Mm. The great paradox.
Okay, so geez. So I was going to say actually the whole same thing you just said, but I started cutting out.
See, this is where there you go, Chippy. There you go.
No.
What did he say? John goes, what did he say? what was that about Dave?
Yeah. So here's the thing I'm wondering, and this is something, you know, so much of the work that you've done, and I feel like if I said your name to people, one of the ways that you are so respected and well-known in the therapeutic community is the emotions, like the
yes.
you know, the work you've done around naming those, and mm-hmm. it's amazing. Like I go into different counselors' offices, or you know, you yeah. go to Daystar, and one of the first
they're
things
on the
you
wall.
See is they're on the wall.
I love that,
which has got to be. I mean, that's got to be affirming to know that this, you know, this works. But can you sort of walk us through that, like to people listening, and John and I both, like, what are they, and sort of how did you get to naming them and that
yeah,
kind of thing?
Yeah, the cool thing is over, you know, this, the results of those feelings being on the wall, or it's about 35 years of beating a little tin drum.
Isn't that amazing?
Wow.
It's just like that little monkey has the battery.
Yeah, yeah,
just
yeah.
Ready.
Yeah.
I couldn't stop. It was so life-changing for me when I was introduced to these eight feelings back in 85, 86. Mm. And they were being used at a treatment center, Cottonwood at the time, back in the late 70s.
Wow.
So this person said, these are feelings. I'm like, they are? And so I didn't know the difference between a feeling and a flower or asphalt road. It just, mind, body, and spirit. You
yeah,
know,
yeah.
You be strong in mind, body, and spirit. And that's the secular way and the Christian way, you know? And like, oh, and I'm from an alcoholic family, addiction family, and got interested and introduced to adult children of alcoholics and the whole recovery movement. And it was recovery of my heart. Mm. It was recovery of the denied territory. And that's when I began to learn that, oh, the longest journey we ever take and the one we spend our lives avoiding is 18 inches from our heads to our hearts to reintegrate. What turns out over the past really 20 years, neuroscience has begun to catch up with the ancient truths. And the ancient truths are that we really are, and this is where it flips people's switches, like what? Or either turns them on or turns them off, is that we are actually emotional creatures by birth who develop the ability to think. We're not thinking creatures who have to try to get rid of our feelings.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
We're made as feeling creatures. So we're made, and feelings allow us to experience life. They allow us to express our internal world to the outside, hunger for connection. So, and we are connection-seeking creatures. Even the brain, which is just an organ, the brain actually finds food or homeostasis or a sense of stabilization through connection. Called safety and security, belonging and mattering. I mean, we're relationship eating creatures. we literally are made to eat each other.
Consume.
Consume yeah. love, care, belonging, mattering from each other. And the eyes tell the stories that awaken us to believing that maybe it's safe and maybe you'll care. Mm. And when we have that, we have the freedom to have full expression. Mm. Because I'm not in the stress of watching you to see what kind of survival threat you are. Mm. You're a thriving offer, not a survival threat. Mm. And all of a sudden, like, now you can see what can the blessing for children. Mm. If they know that they are safe, secure, belong, matter, then they're going to be open to experiencing life and life to the full with you, which means they're going to experience all this stuff around them and gain more from it and be more stable because of it.
So
feelings.
That was great. I mean, everybody listening is like,
feelings are energy in motion. Energy in motion. If they're suppressed, you lose your energy, you lose your motion.
Jeez.
And we've been given 8 feelings of like 3 primary colors. We've got 8 feelings that allow us to live fully in a tragic place. Mm. Living fully means being connected to myself. I know me, head and heart connected. Being able to connect with you if you're available. Or also have boundaries with you if you're not, and then also be able to connect with God. And we don't talk about this very much, but we talk about God as omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent. You get that in theology school, you get that in the church. But who talks about the omnirelational God? Because the God in the Garden of Eden was omnirelational. The God in the Garden of Eden came and said, "Where are you?" Asking for creation's voice. And the man said, "I was afraid." Creation's voice, feelings. "I was afraid, so I hid." And that's been the problem ever since. I'm afraid, I hide. Instead of I'm afraid, I cry. So we've been given 8 feelings that allow us to live fully and be fully connected in a world that's tragic, where we desperately need each other. The tragedy is that we hide our feelings to survive instead of using our feelings to thrive. And so the world takes over for creation and creator. So the world becomes more powerful than the creator. Because we don't know how to say, "I feel fear. I feel sad. I feel hurt. I feel lonely. I feel angry. I feel shame. I feel guilt. I feel glad," which are the 8 feelings. And they're the primary colors that allow us to bring our energy to life and turn it into creation.
John. Dave. I was really enjoying that.
I was like
the drum solo in Inagata Davida. Listen, let's do some word association, okay?
Okay, I love this game.
Okay, just say the first thing that comes to mind.
All right, go ahead.
Latte.
Art.
Coffee.
Methodical.
Okay,
I didn't even have to think about it.
Whole beans.
Dadville signature blend from Methodical Coffee.
Oh my God,
I get 3 for 3?
Yes. Yeah, batting for the cycle, Johnny. Nailed it. I knew I could use the force to get you to save it. I needed you to say right there.
Okay, wait. I blacked out for a second. What happened?
No, just keep going. You're great. You're about to tell everybody, I think, that Methodical Coffee offers a wide variety of profiles that range from classics that are bold and chocolatey. Am I right? Am I right so far? Okay.
Yep.
Contemporary that are medium body and fruity.
Fruity.
Yeah. Yep. And all the way to the avant-garde that...
Push the conventions, Dave. Plus, the Dadville blend is 100% guaranteed to make you a better parent.
Legal had said we literally couldn't say exactly.
You're right.
Okay.
But I said it.
Okay. We'll deal with it later. Methodical roasts their coffee to best express the life it lived, the place, the weather, the soil, and to honor the skilled people who cultivated it.
Guaranteed. I said what I said.
You did. That's cool. Okay.
Yeah.
Head over to methodicalcoffee.com for more info and use the discount code DADVILLE for 10% off your first order.
Listen, Dave, I'm on my 3rd cup right now, so parenting is so easy, right? So let me say it again.
Yeah.
Use the code DADVILLE for 10% off your first order at methodicalcoffee.com.
Well, you know, one of the things that when I was sort of learning about them the first time, that was so, you know, like sitting with Steven, and, you know, he's got him on the table. Mm-hmm. But it's like, and they're just staring and judging you the whole time.
Yeah. Threatening you. Can if I step out of my roles and rules. Right.
But one of the things that he did that was such a hard discipline, and still is, honestly, is you know, Annie and I'd be sitting there talking through something, and he'd be like, "All right, so how'd you feel?" And I'm like, "Well, you know, frustrated." He's like, "Look at the list." I'm like, "I don't like the list. I was frustrated." Yeah. He's like, "No, we have to use." And what those emotions do, and to everybody listening, what I think is so, one of the ways that they're so freeing is you actually can't use these words we get so used to describe things that actually aren't, like, I remember frustrated.
Yes.
Like, that's something Annie and I still say a lot, and he would just, guys, you're not, what are you though? What is fr- like,
yeah.
even with anger, like he helped us understand like anger is, but it, really something is under mm-hmm. triggering the anger.
Mm-hmm.
And you start having to do this work on yourself to integrate where you're like, I thought I was mad, but I was actually just really sad.
Yes.
You know, and you start to have to go, like, to hear myself say I'm sad, all of a sudden I'm like,
oh,
am I sad? Mm-hmm. Why am I sad? Like, because mm-hmm. you're used to being angry.
Yeah.
You're used to being frustrated, whatever that means. Mm-hmm. Whatever. But then to have to go, God, I feel shame.
Mm-hmm.
You suddenly, and I think what helped us so much is when you hear your partner, your spouse say that.
Huge.
The empathy just shoots out of your chest mm-hmm. as opposed to defensiveness where it's, I'm mad or I'm, it's, I guess I'm kind of lonely. And you're like, well, yeah. hold on. I don't want you to be lonely. You know, it's like suddenly you're moving toward.
Isn't that amazing?
To, it's
and
incredible.
It, and it is truly nature and nature's God drawing us towards each other when we remove the masks, the walls that we build to protect ourselves from the world's damage.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like it was a natural flow. And what's amazing is like, you know, you don't go to Taco Bell and order a Big Mac, right? So really,
it's been a long week.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Kind of like, I know you got them in there. But unless we, you know, and you don't, you know, use a wrench to saw a board. So these feeling words are actually the words, and they're that important. They're actually the core expressions of how we're actually created. So it's hard to get the results you're looking for if you don't use the tools.
That's right.
Right?
Well, and two, what you see with those that is so profound is, again, this idea that you're, I think it's so illuminating to me when I have the discipline to pull those in with our kids. I mean, that's a whole other conversation, but like sitting, you know, and having them look at them and go, you know, they're in a fit or something. You go, now, it's best you can, like, tell me which of these you're feeling.
You? Yeah.
Like, where are you? And I think even as a 44-year-old man, it's still illuminating to me that when I'm feeling a bunch of things and I can't, or I'm used to calling it something that sort of makes me feel better or more masculine or safer, that I look at these words that are immediately make me vulnerable, but are freeing because yes. I'm like, oh, that is what I'm feeling. And if I know that's what I'm feeling, then I kind of know maybe how I got there and what I need.
Yes.
And then the conversations change so much because it's no longer defensive or like scared. It's going, you know, I'm just really sad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, that's a whole different thing to yes. talk about.
Yes.
You know, and how we deal with those. But and then you think about kids, the same thing, you know, sitting with your kids and kind of going, you're this little.
And you can see how if I know my own heart and have the courage to deal with it, then I'm going to be available like the Good Samaritan to my own children versus the rich young ruler. I mean, the Good Samaritan was really like a great dad and a great husband and a great friend and a great stranger.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because he got it. He literally like, he came to where the man was, and then it says he saw him, which means he felt him, and then it said he had compassion towards him because he could relate to him. And so parents with children are wondering, can you relate? Do you get what it's like to be me? Mm. And if you relate, then we can be in relationship.
Mm.
If you can't relate, don't worry about it. Don't feel that. That can't hurt you. There's no reason that should bother you. Should. Don't let it affect you. The rules, then all of a sudden the rules take the place of relate.
Mm-hmm.
And the Good Samaritan becomes the rich young ruler.
Mm-hmm.
I've just got to follow and do what my dad said, do what my mom says.
And not engage.
And no longer be engaged in heart. Mm-hmm. I can't ask you questions. I can't be vulnerable. I've got to keep my tears to myself. I've got to go away with my pain. And all of a sudden, we end up introducing our children's hearts to a world that's waiting to seduce them away from how they're made.
Jeez Louise.
I know, it's scary.
So, you know, one of the things.
Sorry about that.
No, I have. Listen,
oh, it's so
you need to buckle up because I have a lot of questions. John is going to try to get some questions in here, but man, it may not happen. So, one of the things that I wanted to that point about integration, what is this thing that I think that I know I struggle with, and I think a lot of people do in this season of life in my 40s, but as I was thinking about having you on, I wanted to ask you this. I, you know, I've never been myself longer than I've been right now, and yet in this season of life, there are times where I feel the least like myself that I ever have. This disintegration that happens, you know, and kids and work and the things that just sort of. What is I mean, is that is What is that? I mean, I'm sure it's a lot of things, but like, as you've seen in your practices, you know, again, you would think at 40, I'm like, man, I've been me the longest I've been me. I know how I work. And yet, you know, Andy and I were sitting the other morning and just talking about how I think I'm in one of the biggest moments for reorganizing my brain that I maybe ever have in my life.
Good.
And you would think you should have been there. You would have been helpful. But you know, what is that? Like,
I just love what you're saying, because a lot of your audience is probably somewhere between, you know, what, 19 and 44 or something like that. So what's astounding is even in the treatment world, you know, I did a treatment center for 20 something years. And most of the people, if you had to do that, you know, that bell curve, most of the people who came to treatment were somewhere around 37 to 45. Mm-hmm. Okay. And Carl Jung and some other developmental, Carl Jung was a psychiatrist. It was kind of the mystical psychiatrist, and some other developmental people. That Jung talked about how that when you hit your 40s, it's an opportunity, in some ways, one of the last opportunities to declare the full pursuit of your true self.
Wow.
Or maintaining your persona face, ego.
Wow.
Which is non-developmental. In other words, you keep repeating, trying to hang on to your 20s or hang on to your 30s to try to prove yourself to the other versus becoming yourself.
Jeez.
So this period of time is a great time for reexamination. And often in the 40s, you have achieved, and at the same time, you still have the chaos of wanting more. Mm-hmm. You're in chaos, which is great because you're asking harder questions. You've already had a chunk of your life go. You're looking at finitude. You're asking yourself, what do I want to accomplish? What does it all mean? I mean, you're asking the real questions about which you almost can't stop having feelings about. Mm-hmm. So if you can't deal with feelings, honestly, you can't deal with life. And at the moment when it's time for full integrity, which is integration, is having integrity with self. You're integrated, which means everywhere you go, there you are, and you know that. You don't wear hats. You are yourself everywhere. But sometimes you're more dad, and sometimes you're more entertainer. Sometimes you're more musician. Sometimes you're more podcaster. Sometimes you're more concentrated. Sometimes you're more wanting to be with Annie. Sometimes you're wanting to be with your friends. But you're able to pick and choose because you know yourself, know what you need, know what you feel, know what you desire, know what you long for, know what you're hoping. In other words, your face is set like flint. You're headed to where you're made to go. And knowing that like this is my orientation. So this chaos kind of brings you to looking for the North Star, orientation, oriented towards where you're headed. And if you have the good fortune of plumbing into some of the depths of how you're made, you will be disrupted from the standpoint of like how powerless we are over life, how much we're in need of God and others. And it's going to reduce us to vulnerability, which feeds us to thrive. It's a paradox. My weakness is my strength. My neediness is the doorway into the treasure trove of God's bounty.
Okay. This is you bump set, and now I'm about to spike a question.
Okay.
This is one of the things, and you just set that up so well. Like, I think, you know, Andy and I were talking about this the other morning. When I started my relationship with Annie, we've been married for almost 17, 18 years, I was maybe dysfunctionally non-codependent. Like, I was so my own island. Annie and I laugh. Like, 17 years in, we were thankfully able to laugh about this yesterday because I'm doing a lot of work on this, but I don't think I've ever been more codependent. And we were talking through, and it's work I'm doing around it, but I'm like, I don't feel like this with really anybody else other than her. But something that I've noticed that you're speaking to that is work I'm kind of trying to detangle from is, how did I get here? Like, what happened between year one of us to year 17? And as you're talking, some of what I'm learning too, just on my own, is what you said, this weird cataclysmic event of old Dave sort of like tropes
slamming into
new Dave,
the rest of Dave.
And really having to do this weird work around like, some of the rink, 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 rink that sort of got me through the 20s and early 30s. And then you throw kids in and work and how work mm-hmm. suddenly feels futile and rewarding but hard and wonderful but hard. And it's just not working
and,
like it
and
used
and
to.
Takes you away from things.
Yeah. Well, and two, just the toil of kind of just life mm-hmm. suddenly sets in mm-hmm. where 20s, you know, and this is just my experience, just feel like, man, if I breathed on something, it sort of came to life and it was like, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. and everything's working, you know? And then you sort of like, you're like, man, my miles per hour, you're slowing down in my late 30s. And then it's like, you know, I think it's just caused this weird thing with she and I where I'm like, she's become the way I just sort of go, you got to make all this make sense. And yeah. I think to your point, and that we just had this great conversation about this the other morning, I'm just like, this is, I'm living in the explosion of these two things, of these yeah. two things that have sort of come to, and it's weird, you know, Stephen has said this for years. I mean, he said this on our, I think on our, no, he said this to Annie and I, but he's like, you know, he and his wife have been married, whatever, 20 something years. And he's like, this is probably our 10th marriage to each other, mm-hmm. you know? And so there's that thing of yourself too, where you're always becoming, but you're in this relationship with someone who's also becoming. And there are these times where you look at each other and you kind of go like, I mean, I know you, but also, like, who are you?
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? And yeah. so, to your point, I love what you said. Like, there is this, I feel that Jungian idea of, like, man, nobody warned me. And, I mean, there's great books about it I've found.
Sure.
But, like, hey, you know, you're going to kind of get to this place mm-hmm. where it's, like, you can feel who you were and you can feel who you're becoming. And they're really at odds mm-hmm. in some ways. And so how you're showing up may be wildly different every day because
yes.
depending on.
And I think in some ways the great news is, as you described yourself, that you become what you called more codependent on Annie.
Mm.
And to me, that's such a affirmation.
Mm.
I mean, it's sick.
Yeah.
However, it's good sick. I mean, because it trumps the narcissism. It trumps the it's about
yeah.
me. It trumps
yeah,
my
right,
success
right, right.
and I'm going to make us whole and I'm going to fix
right.
things and I'm going
right.
to be. And then when we're doing it and it's working, it's like, okay, where's my credit? But codependency is like, you're talking about actually loving her.
Mm.
Like her. Like, and she's one of the most powerful people in your life because
oh, yeah.
she can bring you to codependency.
Right, right.
Like, you
yeah.
know, her face means, uh-oh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What she didn't say means I better mind read.
Right, right.
Like, if I don't say this, then her face is going to do that and she's not going to be pleased and I'm not going to get to be comfortable with her or, you know. And what it means is, even as twisted as it sounds, it means that you love her and you're in love with her.
Mm.
That she has such a tremendous impact upon your heart mm. that the roots down underneath the ground are kind of touched each other mm-hmm. and y'all's limbs kind of intermingle. You're not in the same hole.
Right.
But like you need her, she needs you. If something happens to her, then everything's happened to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in the past, you know, yeah,
yeah.
I love her. It's
yeah,
good.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's a big full life out in front of us. Now it's like everything's connected.
Well, that's, you know, John and I were talking about this the other day, just like I was talking to him about this new journey I'm on to really try to detangle the unhealthy parts and keep the healthy parts connected.
Mm-hmm.
But it's such a, you know, I think one of the things I'm having to undo in some ways, it's turning into a confessional, just send me a bill. I should have told you we're not recording. This is really just for me. No, but
I love the mic. I love the mics and the headphones. Like I feel like a pilot, you know.
Yeah,
so I'm good with
helicopter,
this.
Probably. You're getting to live one of your dreams. But you know, one of the things that I think in my upbringing that really wasn't leaned on enough, I was telling John the other day about this, is like this idea that like, and this is something Stephen really helped us. You know, James helped us me unfold my brain is. I just sort of growing up in the Christian church, which I was really blessed by. I'm one
yeah.
of the few people that kind of came out with a pretty good experience from it, thankfully.
Well, I thank God for church.
Oh, I know, right?
Oh, my gosh. Even crummy church,
yeah.
thank God there's church.
Yeah, amen.
There is a place.
But, you know, one of the things that was hard for me was I think even at the subconscious level, I sort of understood marriage as like, you know, you're one. And so as a man especially, like you've got to really, God's going to come to you and really, Dave, how did you manage this?
Yeah.
And you're the, and just really undoing that. Sure, we are one. And to some degree, there is some truth to that. Like I want to lead well and I want to serve and humbly lead her in the ways that I think God wants me to do. But we are two people.
Yes.
Like wildly different people
yes.
that choose every day
yes.
to be married. and to live together and to be together. And I think that's still a revolutionary thought to me. And so it's, so to your point, when I show up as me healthy and Annie shows up as her healthy, there's still friction, mm-hmm. even in health.
Yes.
Because I can want something very different than she wants.
Yes.
And so I think, you know, I think that's one of the things that's so hard to navigate for me is undoing this idea of like the leader and I, and how do I help her? And she's got things.
Yeah. Even the voice changes.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like Conan. Yeah. And so, you know, really undoing that thing to where, and I think that's where a lot of my codependence gets flared is like, you know, she needs a, and I know the thing, or mm-hmm. I'm just way too affected by how she feels because then I'm not being a good husband.
Yeah.
I'm not, where, as you said, again, the more I'm becoming myself and really able to be who I am mm-hmm. all the time, even in those moments
yeah.
where I can come in and go, hey, and she's, and I go, well, this is where I am. And this is kind of what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
I'm considerate of you, but I'm also considerate of me. And
yeah.
it's that stuff.
How to come to these decisions when there's a, you know, a talk, you have to develop that tolerance for differences.
There you go.
But you know, one, there are four things. We're really two topics, but four things. In the first topic is we're raised as men and or humans, women, that love means, and this is sick, the codependency development. Love means I'm responsible for your feelings.
Yeah.
That means if you've got a feeling, I got to fix it.
Mm.
And if I can't fix it, then I failed.
Jeez,
so that's where toxic shame comes from.
Why you look at me so much? Go ahead. He's there too.
Yeah, there you go. And then I'm staring now. Yeah. You know what's funny? I'll come back to it later. But it's funny that I was thinking about a lot of guys out there are going to say, you know, dude, you got all codependent. You were hard driving, charging. It's like, maybe you just need to get your testosterone checked, you know. Like, but that, I want you to know to your audience, that's not it.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
yeah.
not it.
Yeah,
check. Yeah. It's a heart check.
Yeah.
Not a testosterone. But if I'm responsible for your moods and your thoughts, which means I've got to make you think, which is a power no human has over another person. You don't make people think mm-hmm. unless you're a seducer or a magician or some kind of twisted dude. You try to control thoughts. Mm. And then I've got to make you, I'm responsible for your actions. I actually make you sick, I make you depressed, or I make you hit me. I mean,
wow.
that we're like puppeteers. And children are learning this as the three rules of love. If I'm loving, and I will be loved if I do these things. Mm. So the category, the foundational category is way off. And then the fourth thing is I've got to be a mind reader. Mm. I've got to guess, anticipate, figure out, look for, think for, so that I can make sure you're okay. Then once you're okay, I can get my needs met.
Yeah.
So you're meriting love all the time. There's no room for grace, no room for mercy, no room for a tolerance of differences, mm. right? So topic two is that there's that good Samaritan again. Not only is he a dad, but he's a husband, he's a spouse, he's a wife, he's a friend, he's a neighbor. Because like when you and Annie, this oneness, the oneness is in Christ, we're talking about Christians mm-hmm. or non-Christians, but the oneness is in Christ, there is no Jew nor Greek, no mm-hmm. male nor female, no slave nor free. I mean, it's like the differences are gone and the oneness is present.
Mm-hmm.
But the oneness is the Good Samaritan recognized himself in the ditch
mm-hmm.
and he became one with that other person, meaning he came to where the man was and then he saw him. Then you described like when you and Annie were talking and she says, I'm sad. And I said, like, oh man, I want to comfort you.
Mm.
All of a sudden you had a yielding, a willingness to be vulnerable because you identified, God, I know what sadness is like.
Mm.
And I see it in somebody I love. I can't stop it, but I can be with you in it.
Mm.
See, if you're not responsible for it,
mm.
but you can be responsible towards it.
Wow. Jeez.
And that's where we go from sick to health. Responsible for it? No. Responsible towards it? Yes.
Jeez.
And so that Good Samaritan got in the ditch and he bandaged him.
Mm.
He bandaged him
mm.
because he could relate to him.
Yeah.
Because a Samaritan was somebody who knew pain.
Yeah.
And he was a Good Samaritan, which somebody had helped him.
Yeah.
And he had thrived.
Yeah.
And then he took care of business. He found in anyone who was willing a neighbor.
Yeah.
And so this oneness is not just in our marriages, but it can be with our children and be with our friends and be with our offerings to a world in need too.
So an addendum, John, I love you, I swear. this is like addendum that I was going to ask about.
I have 15 questions, Dave, that are just sitting patiently right here.
I know. Okay, last one, then it's John time. So
John goes, I'm done.
Yeah, he just leaves.
I'm hurt, man. I'm not going to tell you I'm hurt, but I'm done.
I feel sad.
And lonely. So one of the things I want to speak of that I love that you have thoughts around and you speak to, that is to me such an addendum to what you're saying, is this idea of neediness.
Yes.
How hard it is with us to square up with the fact that we are intrinsically needy people. Mm-hmm. Like, we are needy humans. That thing is really hard for me to reconcile. Yeah. When you think about codependency, when you think about marriage, when you think about vulnerability especially with your spouse, I mean, this goes to friendships and everything, but trying to reconcile in us what neediness looks like, but in a way that isn't demanding or isn't shaming of self or isn't, that is hard. Like, thinking of the word neediness is hard enough, but then especially in a way that's healthy. How do you do that?
Yeah, first of all, it's like if I'm hurt, knowing other people who know what hurt is, all of a sudden I've got a connection or a path. Like, I feel hurt, I've got a wound, man, it's bleeding. I don't have stitches. I don't know how to use the needle and thread. Oh, but I know someone who does. So I go to a person who knows what hurt is, who can live hurt, own hurt, a good Samaritan, and knows how to heal hurt. So I go to them with my neediness. And so that I can get help and become wizened by the experience, knowledgeable related to the consequences, and more able to step back into the fray or whatever my heart's compelled to go do. Do you know, like Sonia says something to me, it's like, good gosh, that was rough. Like, whew. Now, me addressing it with her at that moment may not be the best option because, you know, I'm looking for an axe.
Yeah.
You know, like, where's the plates to break? I mean, you know, like, God, oh, you want to play ball?
The gloves come on.
Yeah, they come off. So I need at that time, men really do understand men and men who are really like have heart can understand each other's experiences, so many, and men who are married and walking through being married and the chaos and the struggle and the history and the torture and the love and the greatness of it and the belief from now on it's going to be magic and perfection and just life. Go to another man and go, dude, she sits like, whoa. The guy goes, whoa, did you use an axe? Like, no, but I wanted to.
Yeah.
In other words, to share the struggle and pain with the person who relates to it, all of a sudden everything simmers down.
Wow.
It's like, man, you got hurt. And what'd you do with it? And where are you going to go with it? And I wonder what's going on with her, and go find out. In other words, that hurt, healing, courage. Hurt, healing, courage. And Voice of the Heart, it's the book you're referring to. I mean, all these feelings, through our yielding them, through neediness, because feelings take us to needs, then our needing takes us to solutions, which makes us strong. Like, hurt brings us to healing and courage. So this, after talking to this guy, I go, hey, Sonia, what's going on? And she said, well, you know what? You haven't been home. You haven't been around. You've been working so much. I'm lonely. And then if I say I'm lonely, my fear is that you're just going to tell me, you're going to give me 50 excuses instead of just hearing me say, I miss you. Because when she would say she misses me, I would hear criticism and insult. And then I was doing it wrong. Instead of she misses me, she yields me, she lets me go, but it doesn't mean she doesn't miss me. And in the responsibility for her feelings, her loneliness was my fault. Instead of her loneliness was an expression of how much she cares about me.
Jeez,
isn't that something? It was an invitation. Her neediness was an invitation. My neediness is an opportunity to be joined. But if you're going to be needy, you have to be able to tolerate something. It's called pain. Because when we're needy, it like even when you pray, it means you're willing to wait.
Jeez.
I mean, prayer means I'm in need of something. I want something. I wish something. Hello? 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 So craving for life, needy, because we're connection-seeking creatures, so we need each other and God, means tolerance for waiting, tolerance for hearing the word not yet, tolerance for maybe later, tolerance for wait, tolerance for no, and also tolerance for yes. Mm. Will you trust love when it comes? Do you know? So developing a tolerance for the process of life happening, that things will come in their due time. Well, then that makes us, if things will come in their due time, then we can start trusting the outside world. Mm. And that's where we get gratitude. Mm. And we start to have faith in neediness. Like, my neediness brings me favor. Mm. My neediness brings a solution. I mean, honestly, as crazy as it sounds, the Continental Congress, the United States of America, when the country was being established, the whole thing occurred because of neediness. They said the only way we can succeed is if we contend with each other, mm-hmm. if we need each other. Turns out that Thomas Jefferson, if some of your audience remembers him, mm-hmm. and John Adams, they didn't like each other's philosophies. In fact, they were diametrically opposed philosophically, but they trusted each other internally and emotionally. Mm-hmm. And even when they both died on the same day, mm-hmm. and each one is recorded to have said, at least John Adams is still alive.
Wow.
And Jefferson's, and Adams said, at least Jefferson still lives. In other words, we're still safe. We're still secure. We're still on direction if that man's alive.
Wow.
So they had contended. They had needed each other, even though they disagreed with each other. Welcome to marriage.
Yeah.
You know, so our ability to tolerate the differences while we're still on course as human beings who can relate.
Yeah.
You know, so because we're in relationship through empathy and compassion, then we can go, okay, I can see how you'd feel that way. Mm-hmm. And I can come to where you are and still disagree with you.
Yeah.
And it's like, but see, what happens is in enmeshment, we all have to feel the same way or we're not safe. Mm-hmm. So that's where so many kids, like, if I don't get happy, my mommy's going to be sad. Mm. So I'm going to fake happy. So my mom would be happy, and enmeshment means I'm okay. Mm-hmm. It's like, that's not good. Yeah. We have to break from that and then come back.
Mm. Hey. No, don't give it away yet.
Oh,
okay. John.
Okay. Dave.
Okay. I think I've told you this, but...
Probably.
Touche. You know, I've listened to nothing but the Beatles for the last few months, just getting uh-huh. prepped for this new album. You know that.
Really? Yeah, I did know that. Yeah. It's a cool project. I've listened to it.
Thanks.
What's your favorite Beatles song?
Listen, you know better than to ask me impossible questions, but right now, today, it's Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds.
That's such a good one.
Thanks.
I'm more of a Hey Jude guy myself.
Hey, no problem.
So when this album is finally released and Barnes World Domination is imminent, you should look into using Shopify to get your online orders
together. Touche, my good man. Great idea.
The best part about using Shopify is hearing this sound whenever you make a sale.
Yeah.
I love how Shopify has the tools and resources that make it easy for any business to succeed from down the street to around the globe.
That sound reminds me of when a chorus transposes up half a step on the outro. Mm-hmm. Right?
You are so right.
Thank you for that. Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved for big businesses. So upstarts, guess what? Startups, yep. And established businesses alike can sell everywhere, synchronize online and in-person sales, and effortlessly stay informed.
Go to shopify.com/dadville, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial. That's 2 weeks, people. Yeah. And get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features.
Grow your business with Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/dadville right now.
That's shopify.com/dadville. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Boom. I feel like so much of what you've said so far is really dependent. I don't know if this is the best word to use, but dependent on security. Mm-hmm. You know, like this sort of, when you and Sonia she says something, in that moment, you're recognizing, like, I'm insecure in this moment. Like, for sure. if we go at it now,
yeah,
it's coming out of, I'm going to be operating out of insecurity because that struck some kind of.
And insecurity requires need for control.
Right.
Yeah, grabbing at it.
So I guess overall, I'm curious how you
fail.
Do you have any practices that you have found to be helpful in your life to sort of maintain some sort of baseline level of self-awareness and ultimately sort of security?
Yes, that's a great question. And see, I've been in recovery since 1988. It's just called recovery of heart. And that and freedom, liberation really does require discipline to keep. Mm-hmm. Okay. So morning rituals, relational rituals allow us to live in freedom of life. Mm. So, you know, upon awakening, daily life is, I turn myself over to the process and God owns it. Mm. And so I spend time with me to prepare to address a world that I don't control. So you need a spiritual discipline of security. Yeah. Because if you wake up in the morning and you look at life and you think you've got control of it, you are a fool already. Mm-hmm. I mean, get ready to step on a mine. But if you're prepared, knowing that there are minefields and there's also help in the process of knowing how to walk the path of life, then you're stepping into life secure with your feelings through neediness. So awakening, I'm afraid because I don't have control of life, I'm going to go to the process of getting close to the one who has control of life. So I don't see how a person lives well without God. Mm-hmm. That without that connection, that person has to be in denial. Mm-hmm. I mean, because you got to handle it yourself. You got to have some power greater than yourself, even if it's mm-hmm. just the universe is good or something. So that one, and then also, I think men really need men of heart. I mean, like you and John, I mean, you and Dave, y'all can share with each other. Y'all are bonded. You can share with each other. You struggle together. You literally right across the street from each other. So y'all contend with each other. You got your kids involved. You got your marriages. Mm-hmm. And y'all have conversations related to things that are in some ways private from your wives. Mm-hmm. Because you're together, you are helping each other stay married. Mm-hmm. So men need men, but men who can share, like good Samaritan men, who actually heal each other, comfort each other, forgive each other, can grasp passion about life, celebrate each other, or for each other, mm-hmm. so that you know you have someone in your corner, then therefore you always have someone to turn to. Mm-hmm. So every man needs a list, hopefully over a lifetime, at least six, enough to carry the coffin kind of thing, mm-hmm. of men who say, I knew him. I really knew him. He was really here. So men need men. That's the second thing. And then I think we need a place to contribute so that we are generously sharing. We need to have security of knowing mm-hmm. that I'm giving myself over to something greater than myself. Mm-hmm. I'm contributing to something bigger than I am. Mm-hmm. And that's a security too. But isn't it amazing how all three of the securities start with admission of powerlessness? Mm-hmm. You know, like I need to do something that really matters. I need other men in my life so I can thrive well, and I need a connection to God so that I can be resolved of how I'm going to live every day.
Wow.
So, and isn't it amazing how human beings are created as emotional creatures? This is the voice of the heart. We're created as emotional and spiritual creatures created to live fully, but we can't live fully unless we're living fully in relationship with ourselves, others, and God. And that security I just named came from relationship with me, relationship with God, relationship with others that allows me to offer myself to a world in need. And the greatest gift we have is being able to get to serve. Because sculptors, I mean, y'all make music. You make music because you love it. And you make music, but you want the world to hear it. You don't make it to go hide it somewhere. Y'all aren't doing the Emily Dickens thing, you know. Emily Dickinson, she wrote poems and no one ever mm-hmm. saw, but somebody found them, you know. Yeah. So obviously she left them out before she died, you know. So I mean,
come on, Emily.
Yeah, come on. I mean, we know that game. But we all want to be seen. We all want to be known. And we're literally made like that. We have to work tremendously hard to avoid how we're made. That's called addiction. So insecurity leads to security.
Wow.
So make music, let it be sung, and get ready to get your butts kicked because people are going to criticize it.
Right.
But you're wanting to make it is more powerful than you stopping. Mm-hmm. Even your hurt doesn't stop you. Even your sadness doesn't stop you. But unless your hurt is healed, unless your sadness is comforted, unless your fear is addressed, which means connection to self, others, and God, it can't be addressed otherwise, your music's going to turn sour, or it's going to be an attack, or it's going to be defensive, or you're going to try to quit.
Yeah. Jeez.
You know, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So security is something you have to go get because we live in a tragic place. I wake up every day scared. Even Saturdays.
Even Saturdays. That's supposed to be the one non-fear day. Yeah,
Friday night, nobody calls to bother anybody, right? Nobody has an emergency on Friday night. Saturday morning, everybody's like, just, okay, everything's cool, right?
Yeah.
Okay, but you know what I mean? I don't mean ridiculously afraid, but you know what I'm saying? Just like, I know I don't have control.
Yeah. I'm going to skip ahead here. Because you are getting ready to put a children's book out.
It's out.
It'll be out.
It's out.
This comes out.
Yeah, it's out now. Yeah.
So one thing that
How are you feeling today?
How are you feeling
plug,
today?
Plug.
Yeah, no. It's
plug get away. It anywhere. One thing that I feel like for whatever reason I am just like hung up on as a dad, there's a list here, but maybe the top of the list is like playing with my kids. Actually playing with my kids. I feel like I have to do it, and I feel on many nights when I go to bed, I'm like, if I didn't put in the time playing with my kids, then I didn't have a good day. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious what your thoughts are on that. When I was walking over here on my commute to work, Amy said to me, she's sitting on the porch, and she was like, a friend of hers had just forwarded her an article. She hadn't read it yet. She just got it. And she's like, the title of the article is "It's Okay to Not Play with Your Kids," which I have no idea what that article says. But part of me is like, I got to read that thing. Not that I don't want to play with my kids, but I want to get rid of the shame that I feel if I didn't like nail some bullseye each day in playing with my kids.
Yeah, they're all sweaty and happy and laughing and giggling and can't wait to go to bed to see you again the next day.
Well, there's something about. They have an internal, like external thermometer, and they know when it hits the hottest point in the day. And then that's when they ask me to jump on the trampoline every day.
Yes, exactly.
And I'm like, I just took a shower.
Let's challenge Dad.
No, but what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'll tell you, I think children are fed best when they know that you will deal with all of life. Uh-huh. Okay, so that means that you will go to work and you'll admit sadness and you'll come home. And sometimes you say, hey, look, I'm not in a place to share and talk right now. It has nothing to do with you. I just need to rest for a minute. In other words, that you live truthfully, but you also live intentionally. Mm-hmm. Say, truthful is that you admit the truth of where you are, because if you force yourself over and over again to go do something that you're limited.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Man, I'm so tired. This is going to be resentment based.
Right.
Like, so I'm going to avoid going home. Instead, go home and be limited, and then I'll join you later.
Yeah.
So that's huge. Uh-huh. Admission. And at the same time, one of the greatest joys that your children will remember in their lives is you joining them in their worlds, whether it's working on a project, jumping on a trampoline. It is that willingness to go get sweaty again and take another shower. Mm-hmm. Kind of like, because you don't want to miss, getting to do that with them. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then at the same time, if play is another project, just like putting them to bed is another project, that means that a lot of times if it's a project, it becomes transactional. Like I have to do this because if I don't do this, then they're going to grow up and they're going to be in therapy, or they're going to, you know, they're not going to keep their job. They're always, you know, they're going to get a divorce.
Right.
When you become grandiose in your predictions out of your own wounds, out of your own shame, out of your own shoulds, then they're not getting you really anyway.
Jeez,
on some level, they'll smell it out. They'll intuit it because your face. I remember my oldest son. I'm reading the newspaper. He's talking to me, just sharing stuff. And all of a sudden, I felt his little fingers on my chin, and he turns my head, and he said, "Daddy, look at me when I'm talking to you. You're not listening." I'm like, "That's the truth. God. That is the truth."
Yeah.
And even moments, I mean, 5 minutes of closeness beats 50 minutes of distracted.
Yeah, you
know, word. And it's real. Mm-hmm. It's really real. It feeds them. And the thing is, they will get enough of us.
Hmm.
And at the same time, they never will.
Right.
Because they would love for you to take them to a place you can't. Mm. And they would love for you to rescue them from something you can't. Mm. And teaching them slowly that you will do everything you can to always be there, but you're going to show them how to live life.
Which is the beginning of mm-hmm. their relationship with God.
Yes.
Because you're not God anymore.
You introduced them to God. I remember I was standing out in the driveway. Tennyson had a little Santa Claus hat on. It's June. It's Texas. A big rain had just come. He's wearing a diaper. And I saw a rainbow. And I said, "There's a rainbow." I said, "There's gold at the end of the rainbow, Tennyson." And he starts walking out towards the street. He said, "Take me there, Daddy." I'm like, "Oh, let's see." Like, and there's a fence across the street, a privacy fence. I'm like, "I can't take you there." Mm. I mean, that was, I cannot make your life something I can't make mine either.
Jeez Louise.
Right? So we introduce our children, like you said, to God through
the limitations of ourselves.
Yes. And still, we were born with perfection in our hearts, Ecclesiastes 3. Mm-hmm. So eternity in our hearts, rather, which is perfection. We're looking for a place we can't get to, mm-hmm. but we can be sad with them as they keep finding out. Mm. We can still keep hope in it.
It kind of gets back to what you said in the beginning, like just be with them.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, I hate to say it like that, but yeah, it's just be mm-hmm. with them and be where you are without introducing them to where you need adults to help you get adult solutions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, you make sure you don't introduce them to fix me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Now I'll tell you what I told both my sons. I said, "I will never, ever say I did the best I could to you. I will never lay claim to when you come to me with your sorrows and pains as men, where I blew it. I'm never going to look at you, well, son, I did the best I could."
Yeah.
But what was so amazing, one of my sons said to me the other day, I was sharing some regrets, and he said, "Dad, I know you told me you would never say that, but I'm wanting to tell you,
jeez,
I know where you come from, and you've done the best you could."
God.
Oh, what an award. And what an admission that I know you fail. I know you make mistakes, which is also an introduction to him knowing that I accept his.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like,
that's great.
Wow.
Okay, so we know you got to go. So we got two quick questions we end with. Thank you again. I mean,
man, thank y'all. The thing is, here's my problem. I'll confess a problem. That wherever I go, I'm so interested in this that no one has ever said, "Chip, turn the water up." You know, everyone always says, "Okay, fire hydrants." Nobody ever says, "Is that all the pressure you got in your water?"
Let me tell you, in my life, John is not like this because John is very subdued and he is very disciplined. No one has ever said, "I feel like you're not giving me all you got to give." That is just, no one has ever looked at me and said,
"No,
what else you got?"
Say,
because they're worried that there might be more.
I feel like from your temperament, Dave.
John, that's the problem. It's like they're worried, like, "Oh, is all you got?" No, I got more. I'm donkey from Shrek.
Do you have sugar here?
Oh,
just some
seriously.
Sugar and you'll see another level.
Seriously, okay, we're going to tell manly stories in the morning. I'm making waffles. I mean, it's like Shrek. It's like, Sonya calls me donkey from Shrek. She says, "Do you ever stop?"
No, I don't. Our sweet wives. Okay. First question we ask everybody at the end. What is, you've talked about your sons, what is the one thing you want your sons to know?
That I absolutely adore them. Mm. I absolutely love them. And in that, I want them to go. Mm. Go do. Don't miss what you're made for. Mm. And go give it. Mm. Go get it and give it.
Don't miss what you're made for.
Don't miss it. And no matter what it costs me.
Mm.
And meaning like go.
Yeah.
Go.
Yeah.
Your job is to go into the future. Mm. Your job is not to come back here and take care of the past.
Wow.
You know,
wow.
You
man.
Know?
Jeez.
Yeah, sorry.
Jeez.
Oof. I mean, parents owe their children. And those children owe their children. Mm. So that's not an escape route. It's not like I owe you and therefore you just keep being a taker.
Yeah, yeah,
the
yeah.
Giving Tree, Shel Silverstein.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That is a book of horror about warning parents not to be codependents.
Mm.
You know, like you can't play with your children to the point that you rescue them from life. Mm-hmm. If you do, they're going to cut your tree down and cut it. Shel Silverstein says he takes the apples and takes the branches to start a fire, then cuts the tree down to build lumber for the house. And then all of a sudden the child's sitting on a stump going, well, I guess that's it. I ate my parent alive, you know, mm-hmm. because the parent mm-hmm. did not take care of herself or himself.
Mm-hmm.
So you, I love that you don't want to play with your children some days.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. And they need to know it because mm-hmm. daddy has a life too. Daddy's limited. Daddy didn't have all the answers. And that's where you said, you know, I don't have everything. I'm not going to create eternity here. It's not here.
Yeah.
So I love that.
That's a weird death to die.
It is.
As a parent.
That is, yes.
Like just going, yep, this is, there's the end of me, folks.
I don't have it. I'm not taking you to the pot of gold and you're going to need God. And I don't like that either.
Yeah. Right?
Parents. And that kind of does speak to how much we parents don't trust God.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you the gold because you can't trust him to do
it.
Yeah,
man.
Because you know what God's going to let them have? Same lives we've had. Feelings, needs, desire, longings, and hope, the same struggles.
Yeah.
And I don't want them to have to go through that. So, God, you stay back. Let me handle this part, and then you can have them later.
Yeah.
Once I'm gone.
Oh,
I can't be sad anymore.
Yeah.
Speaking of once you're gone, this is the last question. What do you want your boys, thank you. What do you want your boys to say at your funeral?
He loved me. He wanted my best, and he was willing to do what it took. And also, my dad gave all. So my theme song is actually an old song. I don't even know if I can tell you what it is.
We got a guitar right here.
I think it would make you laugh yourself to death and try to play, to dream the impossible dream, Man from La Mancha.
Oh,
I wrote a novel and I even put that in there. That, but the impossible dream to say that you know I used it all up.
Mm-hmm.
He gave all. He never stopped. He never quit. He never stopped believing. He walked all the way through what he was compelled and called to do. And
man,
he left something behind that's worth keeping. You know, the legacy and keep it in their hearts. You know, mm-hmm. I just want them to know that I loved them.
Yeah.
You know, just loved them.
Yeah, amen.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank y'all.
This was great.
Oh, thank you, John.
My
thank you. Thank you, Dave.